38. Cutting a Path. The first night in the rainforest had dampened Octavia's enthusiasm for being alive. It had been a grand adventure while they were in the air, but on the ground, among the hooting animals, chirruping insects and wet chill, she loathed it. Rats she could take. London had millions of them. But scaly things that slithered, creatures that made odd growling sounds, others climbing in the trees, bats the size of owls, and a pestilence of insects biting and crawling on her skin. It was all a little much for a girl from Seven Dials. A night of no sleep had been followed by a cold breakfast of canned meat and water. Then Mr. Socrates barked commands like an infantry general, and they packed up camp and marched on, tracing the path indicated by the map in his hand. "Miss Hackandotte will expect us to make a beeline for the nearest port," Mr. Socrates explained. "I'm guessing that she's now got her soldiers patrolling the paths leading to Port Douglas and Cooktown. She may even have created allegiances with whatever natives inhabit this area. So we will circle westward and approach the temple from that direction. Nothing like the element of surprise."
"I don't mean to be impertinent, sir," Octavia said as she stomped on one of the millions of ferns carpeting the forest floor. "But how can we be certain that the artifact is actually still in the temple?"
"We can't. The only way to be certain is to enter the temple ourselves. My guess, and I admit this is only a guess, is that Miss Hackandotte is still here because she wanted to revel in my obliteration, or she's attempting to steal the relic. After all, we don't know for certain what it was that drove Alexander King mad. Perhaps, whatever it is proving to be a bulwark against her." It was now clear to Octavia that it was the jungle that had driven the explorer mad. She followed Tharpa as he swung the machete, cutting a path through the hanging vines.
"We'll have to hack our way back to London," Octavia thought, as she struggled under the weight of her haversack.
It was stuffed to the top with smoked meat, biscuits, ammunition, and any other useful supplies they had retrieved from the Prince Albert's wreckage. Mr. Socrates held his elephant gun as if he were waiting for a charge, and Lizzie brought up the rear. After 3 bug-bitten hours, they stopped for lunch, sitting on a fallen tree trunk and munching hard biscuits with marmalade. Tharpa sharpened the machete between bites, and Mr. Socrates made notes in his journal. Lizzie sat staring into the forest. Octavia drank water from a tin cup and studied Lizzie's tattoos. In the jungle light, they made the woman look less civilized.
"Lizzie, do you know this area very well?"
"Been here once or twice," she grunted.
"Ah, and you lived to tell the tale. That's a good sign."
But Lizzie didn't smile. She was on par with Tharpa for humorlessness.
"You're of native blood. Is your tribe from here?"
"No, this is the land of the Rain People."
"And what are they like?"
"They live. They hunt. What more do you need to know?"
Octavia shrugged. It was like conversing with a python.
"Well, where are your people?"
"In my heart," Lizzie said with a hint of bitterness.
Octavia nodded and fell silent. A few minutes later, they were back on their feet. Mr. Socrates marched ahead, but Octavia had lost all sense of direction. With all these leaves, it was impossible to tell whether the sun was in the east or west. She'd never understood the use of a compass. It was streets, their curves or straight lines and landmarks, that made sense to her. According to Mr. Socrates, humanity had risen out of a jungle just like this one. As she slapped at a mosquito, she found it very hard to believe. Humans built cities and ships to get away from these uncivilized places. It was insanity for any English citizen to return willingly to the jungle. She trudged over the moist earth, catching her foot on a thick vine and biting back a curse. Lizzie was walking along as if it were Hyde Park, for pity's sake.
"You should try to be half as graceful as her," Octavia told herself.
A lock of hair slipped in front of her eyes. Humidity made her hair unruly with curls. She shoved the lock back under her sun helmet and looked over at Lizzie, envious of her cropped hair. At least they both had trousers on. Octavia didn't even want to imagine what it would be like trekking through this green hell wearing a dress. Her thoughts turned to Modo, as they had 1,000 times already that day. He might be dead.
She'd been trying to keep her spirits up by dreaming of more cheery scenarios, in which he had hit his head and lay unconscious somewhere, or had landed on 2 feet and was right now doing jumping jacks to keep warm. All the scenarios ended with their emotional reunion. He might have lived. He was much stronger than any man she'd known, and he could, as her old gang would have said, take a beating. But the fall was from such a great height that his body would have been shattered. She pictured him lying on the forest floor, splayed out, his mask several feet from him. His face turned toward her. Of course, it was featureless. Even in her imagination, she couldn't put a face to him. What did he look like? In death, he could still be a stranger to her, would always be a stranger to her. And now she would give anything to see him again, with or without a mask. Even if he was the ugliest man on earth, she wanted to look into his face again.